I want to use notes this morning because I want to end up saying what I intend to say. We gather this morning to pray that our nation may maintain its religious liberty. And not only the liberty to worship inside of our churches, but the liberty to go forth from our churches and follow the dictates of our consciences. That's very important for us because we believe that there is a moral code, and that moral code comes from a source which is much greater than we ourselves. And we also believe that if we follow that code, our lives will basically go well. We may not always get everything we want. Things may not be the way we would like them. But if we follow that code, somehow our lives are in God's hands. But if we fail to follow that code, then it brings about our moral destruction. However, we live in a society that is increasingly secular. By secular, I mean a society that is trying to separate itself more and more from any dominance by any religious beliefs or any religious convictions. It is a society that in some way believes in God, and yet wants to maintain a clear separation between what we do inside of our churches and how that influences how we live. There are some people who see this secularism as a good thing because it frees us from any dominance by popes or bishops or priests or pastors or itinerant preachers. They see that as a blessing. But I think you and I are beginning to see that there can be a tyranny of secularism. And that tyranny may be as frightening as any religious tyranny might ever have been. What I mean is, in our society, one is free to think as they want. As long as they think like those who are strong enough in our society to influence the values and the ethics of that society. Secularism has no absolute values. Nothing, or at least very little, in the secular point of view is intrinsically good or intrinsically bad. Nothing is really right or wrong in itself. And what is right and wrong can change with relative ease. Let me give you an example of that. There was a time in our nation, and most of you remember it, when anyone and everyone had the right to smoke. And no one had the right to get an abortion. Now, everyone has the right to an abortion, and the right to smoke is severely limited. 40 years ago, hardly anyone would speak about the possibility of same-sex marriage. Now, one can be accused of discrimination for opposing that possibility. What I mean by all that is simply what is right and what is wrong in a secular society can change very easily and very quickly. When God is removed from the values of a society, there exists no objective norms for what is right or for what is wrong. Those who have the power to influence the thinking of society such as the media or perhaps higher education, begin to define what is right or what is wrong for that society. Those in places of prominence dictate the values of the society. Because of that, abortion has now become a right. Contraception must be unlimited. Euthanasia is often seen as a desired goal, and same-sex marriage as an inalienable right. We are here today, we as a church stand today to say that there are absolutes in the area of morality. Some things are intrinsically right or intrinsically wrong. We hold this because we believe there is a God who has given us norms for building happy lives and strong societies. We do not see these norms as an imposition on our freedom. To the contrary, we see the norms or the commandments that our God has given us to give us freedom, freedom to know how to live, how to achieve the purpose for which God created us. Ultimately, they are norms or guidelines that help us to reach eternal life. Freedom of worship, freedom of conscience, has always been at the very heart of our nation. That is why it's part of the First Amendment of the Constitution. Our founding fathers knew how basic that was to a free people, to worship as they want, to believe as they want, and to follow the dictates of their consciences. This morning we ask God to give us wisdom and strength to preserve the liberty for which we have stood as a nation. We ask that as a nation, we can return to a belief in God. Not just a belief in God that we hold in the privacy of our churches, that we can live out as we go about our lives, in our homes, in our businesses, in our schools, on our streets. We believe that if we follow those guidelines, they will help us to find a way to happy lives and fulfilling lives so that we can be all that God has created us to be. There was a line running around in my head, and I did not know where it came from, but it said that a democracy cannot survive without a belief in God. And I have come to believe that because if we have no absolute values, someone is going to control those values and begin to try to force them on other people. I thought maybe it was Thomas Jefferson who said that line. But thanks to Google, I found out it wasn't Thomas Jefferson. It was Ronald Reagan. He said it at a prayer breakfast back in about 1984. There's one last thing I want to talk about, and that comes out of the gospel reading. I say to you, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. In this debate that we are having as a nation, we must remember that command that Jesus has given us to love our enemies, to love those who think differently than we might think, to love those who have values that are different than ours. It doesn't mean we agree with them. It doesn't mean that we do not try to oppose them. It doesn't mean that we tolerate oppression from them. But it does mean we respect them, their dignity as human persons, and that we love them as children of God. In this debate that we are having as a nation, anger, hatred, judgment, condemnation will not win the day for us. What will win the day is trust in God and love and respect for one another.